Hey, everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Becky, and joining me for this episode is some amazing category and just romance authors. Welcome to the podcast, Maisie Yates.
Hi.
And Jackie Ashendine. Did I say it right? Or did I butcher it?
Yeah, Ashendine. Yeah.
Ashendine.
Hello.
And then Megan Crane.
Hello.
And Nicole Helm.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome. I'm so excited you guys are here to join us. So for this episode, we are diving into the world of category romance. So thank you to Maisie, because Maisie set up. I was like, hey, do you want to come on this an episode? And do you want to bring your friends? And she's like, yes, I have the people you want to talk to. And I'm like, okay. And she didn't lie. I was like, I saw this name and I'm like, I've read their books and I've read her books. I was like, yes. So we're diving into the world of category romance, the heart of the genre that's been delivering love stories packed with passion, drama, and happily ever afters for decades. We're joined by some incredible authors who have been shaping the space, crafting stories that resonate with readers all over the world. We'll explore what it takes to write these iconic category lines, how the genre has evolved, what category romance continues to capture our hearts year after year. Whether you're a longtime fan or new to the format, this episode is for you. I have to tell you guys, one of my earliest memories is category special edition, so the Blues, the Montana Maverick series. And my mom had a group of friends that had the paper sack full of categories that went from house to house. And I was a high schooler, and I remember just digging them out, like trying to capture as many as I could. Were you guys category readers before you decided that, like, this is where I kind of wanted to write? Did you read category?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was my intro to romance.
Yeah.
I read them. I found my first romance novel when I was 12, found category short. It wasn't a category romance. Found, it was a pirate romance, though. So anyway, but then and I found category shortly thereafter, was addicted, spent my life crawling around used bookstores trying to find all the actual
books. Yes.
I wanted every single one in the entire line that I liked. Yeah, absolutely obsessed.
Yes. I think that, and I tell people this all the time, and sometimes people get it and others don't. And I don't know if it's because of my age in romance. My first romance was a Jude Devereaux, medieval. So like, but then I found those categories and there was just something comforting about them and intriguing and engaging. And they fit so lovely in your pockets. Mm. Like, you could put a whole book in your pocket and take it with you.
You could bring in many of them in your purse.
Right?
Yeah.
I just...
A friend of mine and I used to... I'm in New Zealand, by the way, in Auckland. And we used to go around the secondhand bookstores trying to find the category books. And I didn't know what line they were from. I didn't even know there was lines. I only knew they had a rose on them. And that I think the red roses had sex in them. And so my friend and I would go to the shelves where all the Mills and Boons were, and we would go looking for them and go, oh, this one's got sex in it, we'll take that one. This one, no, we won't take that one. And we used to go through and come out with piles of books, and they all had to have sex in them because those were the best ones.
Those were the best ones. There, I don't know. There's something, I just always think there's something magical about category.
Yeah.
And in recent years, I don't feel like category gets enough appreciation for what we get out of it. Like,
no.
I feel like category is the one book I know where about the percentage of spice is going to be. Now, in the 90s, the rumor was page 100. You know, you could open a book to page 100, and at that point, there would be the start of the sex scene. Like, that was the thing. But I have since learned that is not actually, like, the rule anymore. If it was ever the rule, no. It's not the rule anymore.
It's probably never a rule as much as, because you know, they are a certain length.
Right.
So it's less a rule and more of a, this is like a place that it like fits into a narrative that's 50,000 words. But I know what you're saying, because like Jackie, I was going into used bookstores, and we had a book exchange just right before there were little free libraries. We had a big book exchange, and I found A Temptation, Blaze, Desire, and Presents, and then the historicals, but you had to like flip kind of partway through to figure out like how spicy was it, you know? And so yeah, I was doing the same thing. I was like between 100 and 110.
Yeah.
You could like kind of get a gauge for like how the sex was going to be, and then, you know.
So funny. I became obsessed with various authors. And so I would just follow them around. I didn't really like, you know, I didn't really care what the sex content was.
You're more mature than I am, I guess.
I think.
She might beat us on the maturity line there.
Unproven.
What about you, Nicole? What was your introduction to category?
Kind of on what Megan is saying, I was introduced to romance via Nora Roberts. So in reading Nora Roberts, I just read a lot of her category books, and I didn't really have a sense of like, this is category. I was kind of following authors along, and it took actually becoming a writer and like conceptualizing the publishing landscape to understand that those books were different. So I think for a lot of readers, part of why they may not think of category in that way is because that's the business end of it. Like, I think a category line can be a lot like an author if you follow authors along, because they are promising a certain thing, just like an author is often promising a certain voice.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, it was more just figuring out, oh, that's what I've been reading when it was that way or whatever. But I followed different authors within lines. But I think a line functions a lot like your favorite author.
For sure. And I think kind of like I said, the Montana Mavericks, like that, I loved Cowboys. And then I found Brenda Jackson and the Westmorelands. And I like seriously did. I think I was a senior in high school, maybe a freshman in college. I remember having a conversation with somebody. And I was like, you know, I really think there's promise in being a sheep farmer in Colorado.
Those men are very rich.
Right? I mean, there's a lot of potential there. Like,
yeah. Sheep farms and sheep.
Right? I'm like, I feel connected to sheep farmer. And I remember my friend looking at me, she's like, are you insane? I'm like, maybe. But you have to read this book because, like, I don't know. I love those Westmoreland men. But what took me to Westmoreland men was it's the same last name as one of the families that Judith McNaught wrote. She had the Westmorelands in her historicals. And then the first time I picked it up, I thought, wait, is this, you know, like an American version? And it's not related at all. But but I had one of those things happen just this week. There's a new all-romance bookstore in Connecticut, and they named it the Montgomery Taggart Bookstore. And I was like, I think I know what your inspiration is, but I could be wrong, but can you tell me what your inspiration is? And they're like, we love Jude. And I'm like, yes, I knew it. Which, you know, anyway, I'm a little extra like that, if you haven't caught on yet.
I'll be extra. That's the whole point. That's why we write category romance.
The thing is people don't realize category really can show trends coming into the market before the main large novel, long novel, I don't know what else to call it, full length novel. Although I feel like category at 60,000 words, because you can have up to 60. It's a full novel. It's a complete story. But I think that category can show us trends before they become trends outside of category and start to lead the market. Because we did an episode back in August of race car, Formula One, like we're going to start to see in the market lots of racing romances. Well, back in the early aughts, Harlequin had that whole NASCAR line.
Yeah.
And that was like revolutionary. They were selling romance books at NASCAR races.
I think that one of the interesting things, and this is again like a publishing side marketing thing, but I think one reason you do see that in category romance is that because the category is sort of the high concept pitch, like it's a Harlequin Presents. And if you know what that is, you kind of know what you're going to get. And within that, as long as we have like some top line tropes there for people to grab onto, you can put things in the book that you don't have the freedom, because all of us have been writing both a lot throughout our entire career. So you'll hit brick walls in the single title side of publishing where they're like, we don't know how to sell this. But in category, because you're sort of insulated by what some people view as constraints or you know, barriers, it's like you're a little more free in some ways because they already know how they're going to sell it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they already know how they're going to sell it, you can put in, you know, Formula One. I know Presents had a Formula One book kind of before some of the single title books. I mean, they've always had that. It's always been there. How they emphasize it or not kind of relates to the market. But yeah, I think we have that freedom because we're not trying to sell it necessarily based on that. They're like, it's Presents, so.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, we were doing tropes before it was popular.
That is true.
For sure.
I mean, I've had publishers reject manuscripts from me saying it's too category in that there were tropes, obvious tropes in the book. This was like 6 years ago. And it's like now you can't move for tropes.
Right.
Everybody's got them.
That's so interesting. Because, you know, I think about like the evolution. Well, in the 90s, it was millionaire romances. And then we slowly started to get into billionaire romances in the 2000s.
Just for inflation.
Right. But we saw so many of those in category for years before we started seeing it, you know, long form and across, you know, I don't know. See, this is why I love category. It's just all right there.
Yeah.
What do you guys love the most about writing in category? I'm sure it is not perfect. I'm sure you're like, sometimes I need 5,000 more words. Stop taking my words. But what is it about category and writing within category romances that you love?
Well, everything about writing in category romance.
Yes. Because I don't think of it like, I don't sit down and think, okay, I'm writing a category romance today, or I'm writing a single title today. It's about the characters and the story that's already been determined. Mm-hmm. And the story that you decide to write is somewhat determined by whether it's category or single title, whatever. But that's not really, I'm not sitting there thinking about that as I write it. So like, I mean, my favorite thing about writing category is pretty much the same as writing anything else. I like writing short. I think it's fantastic to not have to describe things.
you? What?
To have a 50,000 or 60,000 word count instead of a 90 or 100,000 word count. Yep.
Yeah. No. That's fair.
I love when I go to Presents from doing, and so I do write special edition as well, which is 70,000 words, which kind of bums me out, I gotta tell you. But when I go from like small town to Presents, I'm always like, oh, fantastic. Like the
training, yeah.
I can do whatever I want. Like it's like shoot for the moon. And I love that freedom to just like be operatic. Like that is my place. Yeah.
That's what I like about it. It's, it suits the way the kind of the heart of me as a writer is just to go, you know, turn everything up to 11 and go even further than that. Like you can have a king, you can have a prime minister, you can have a queen, you can have a virgin, pregnant, you know, all of this kind of stuff. It doesn't matter. As long as it's sort of crazy, you can write it. And no one's going to tell you, you know what, I don't think that's actually real life. And it's like, no, that's why I like writing it, because it's not real life.
I know, you don't have to justify it with like, what would real people
do?
No, you can just be as cracktastic as you want. There was a famous quote from a writer whose name I can never remember, who said the category is like doing Swan Lake and telephone booth. But I think it's actually being on a stage, and you get to do whatever you want as long as you stay on that stage, which is the category line. And so you can do a whole lot on a stage. You can just, and the wilder and crazier, the better, in my opinion.
It's a big stage.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I love that. I don't think category is that bonkers. You guys talk about it like, we can do whatever we want. And I'm always like, it doesn't feel bonkers to me. It just feels like home. I always know going into the story. And so as you are writing these, has your approach to how you write within the category line, has it changed? Do you think, okay, this time I'm going to try to sneak in this character and we're going to see what happens? Or is it just that you're like, this is tickling my brain, I'm going to write this?
Yeah, in the most respectful way, because I love categories so much, so I don't want anyone to misconstrue this. I take myself less seriously.
Okay.
Than I did when I was on book one or even 20. And I'm like, I'm going to try this. And if it doesn't work, you know, then I'll redo it. But I think this sort of, I just approach everything with a little bit more freedom, whereas I used to maybe take it a little bit more deadly seriously, like, oh, I'm going to try to not get revisions or whatever. And now I'm like, I'm just going to see if this works.
Yeah.
Because it's been a lot of years and a lot of books. And I'm like, I'm going to try this or I'm going to redo this. But yeah. It looks like now 15 years later, now that I'm a different writer than when I did it 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I also think we once said that it wasn't a present unless Macy and I were standing on a street corner waving our hands around, like, and then he comes this, but she's doing this, and then that. And so it has to be like, that's the opera. And then you get to do all the emotion, and then you have a category book. And then, yeah. I don't know. I think it's fun. Like, fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nicole, is it hard to get all the emotion that you want to get into the characters, into the story? Is it hard to do that for you as you guys write, or is it one of those things that you're like, I have the freedom, I can do it, I'm going to get all of this in there?
Yeah, I think, you know, as a character-driven author, and I think category is great for character-driven authors because there's a framework for whatever line you're working in, so you can focus on character. You don't have to worry about the sort of external, like if I'm writing intrigue, I know it has to have a suspense thing in it. And if I'm writing presents, it has to be, you know, kind of sort of fairy tale-ish and different. And so to me, the emotion, it starts with emotion. It starts with, why are these people doing this? And how would they react to these things? So no book is not starting with that seed. And I think that can come across in any amount of words if that's where you're starting from.
Yeah.
And I think I was thinking about this the other day. I think Nicole is the only Harlequin author to ever write for presents and intrigue. And I like that, to me, is like, those are polar opposite category lines. Has a really strong,
they're almost like the inverse. Yeah,
they are. They're the inverse of each other. And presents is this very strong internal engine. And so it's a great study in how the same author can like adjust that engine, and how category is such a neat form, because, and both, both lines, whatever she's writing for, they're filled with emotion. But I was going to say,
whether she's Lorraine Hall, which is her presents name, or Nicole Helm, she writes intrigues, which are supposedly stripped down with more emotion. Like, it's outrageous. She'll say like one word. I'm like, oh, that would take me 15 pages to get to the emotion. And often does take me 15 pages to get to that emotion.
It's a super interesting study in like, in the versatility of category and of short form, and how to articulate emotion. Like, it's really, I mean, that's what I find so interesting about category. I'm like, they're the shot of whiskey of romance versus like the mixed drink. It's like, it's just the romance arc, or, and in intrigue, a romance and suspense arc working together on the same track, which is wildly difficult. And I can't imagine doing that. But that's like, as you were saying, they are full length books because they have every single thing that a 90 to 100,000 word romance contains. Cause you cannot skimp on the romance arc in a romance.
You can't,
no. So it's only the hard parts.
Well, in intrigue, I love intrigue because I feel like it's like a Law and Order episode. Yes, there is, it's going to be a little bit of a formula, but I'm going to get that suspense element. It's the monster of the week, kind of that Scooby-Doo vibe. And I love them. And anyone who can write those, and I didn't have to like, so I won't lie, us hosts at Buzzing About Romance, we do love a shorter book. Like, we get a little itchy when you start to go over 400 pages. We're like, oh, we have to read that? Like, somebody suggested a book
to us. It's a commitment. It's a commitment.
Somebody suggested a book that was like 550 pages, and everyone was like, yeah, we're out. We can't. But like, intrigue, 225 pages, and I got a full mystery, like, best 90 minutes, 2 hours of my life. But, you know, I love procedural type television. Yeah. Like, give it to me. Nicole, is it a challenge to switch between presents and intrigue for you?
I actually usually really like it. Sometimes you're in a groove and you want to keep writing one or the other. But for the most part, it's like you get tired of trying to come up with, you know, a murderer and a mystery. And you're like, okay, I can go over here and not think about plot at all and deal with emotion. And by the time I've done that, then it's like, oh, I had this, you know, I saw some new story and I've got a new idea for a mystery. So I find it really refreshing, actually. And it helps me write more to be able to switch back and forth between doing different things and not getting stuck doing the same thing over and over.
Well, I watch a lot of Dateline, and if you ever need a story idea, feel free to DM me. I got lots. Like, I listen to Dateline to go to sleep at night. Anyway.
Oh my goodness.
I love.
Wow. Okay.
Give me some murder. Just give it to me. But Jackie, you tension, the tension in your books and the angst. And I'm like,
yeah,
how is this going to come together? And I always get worried when I pick up one of your books. I'm always like, can she do it? Or am I going to be like pitching? I will say there have been a couple through the years that I've read of yours that I have pitched across the room because I'm like, she cannot make this work. And then I pick it back up and it totally worked.
I mean, they're romances. They all work in the end, don't they?
But you like, do you sit down and go, okay, how am I going to shove as much angst as I can into this book?
Yep.
Okay. Well, thanks for letting me know that.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. I am a real fan of obviously tension and really extreme emotion, and that's how I write, and I've always written like that, and I've toned it down and made it more subtle in other sort of books. But I mean, this is why I like Writing Presents, is because I can just go off the leather with the angst and, you know, the tension, and really, really kind of dial it up. And no one is telling me, you know, just bring it down. Although sometimes my editor has said, you know what, we probably need a few lighter moments in your books, Jackie. Like, could they just sort of cuddle? And it's just like, no, sorry. They cannot. Can there is no cuddling in my books.
No. Somebody might throw a punch in one of your books, but nobody is like...
Well, actually, yeah.
Thank you for the orgasm.
Heroine slaps the hero.
Stop touching me.
Across the face. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I I really like that about Presents. So be warned when you pick up one of mine, I guess.
I did. I scoured through and I was like, okay, which of these? And I thought, I never really put it together until I was prepping for this episode that your books, I have them all tagged as in the mood for angst. Like, that's how they're all tagged.
You kind of got to be in the mood for it, yes.
I'm just like, wow, this is all the same author. I didn't even put it all together.
That's fantastic.
I'm just like, okay. Well, and I think it, Maisie, you have done some longer family series in your stuff. And did you kill somebody off in a family or bring...
Like brought someone back.
Cowboy, I mean, yes. Well, like, they're back from the dead. Nobody knew they were still alive.
Was that the Carsons of Lone Rock in the last one, special edition? Yeah, no one knew what happened to him. I did. I brought him back, and I brought him back with teenagers.
Yeah. I was like...
As you do.
I'm like, that to me is what's fun. Those are like more soap opera-y cowboy books. So it's... Because again, category, you're sort of distilling... you have less words, and so those words have to do more. And so I think that's where you get these kind of, and it's interesting to hear you say, you know, they don't feel over the top to you. And I think that's totally valid. It's like when you're on a stage performing in theater and you have to shout so they can hear you at the back of the room, and it's not too loud for them, but you feel like you're talking really loud. And I think that's kind of the writing experience often, is you're like, I'm just gonna throw it in there, and then people are like, oh, that's about right. But yeah, so things like that. I did a I think that series started with the gender swapped Overboard. Like, it started with Amnesia. So I start as you mean to go on.
Yeah. Because I was looking at all of them, and you have had some longer families, like families that have kind of trickled in and out.
Go on forever, ever, ever, yeah.
Yeah, and I was like, wait, I think she's the author that, like, either killed somebody off or brought someone back from the dead.
I don't usually kill people. I don't usually kill people unless they're very old or very bad, so.
You do have a lot of orphaned adults,
though. I do have a lot of orphans, yes. It's the Disney rule.
Yeah.
It's like the conflict has to come from somewhere. So, like, if Disney can kill off everyone's mom, so can I.
I was like, there was one. I was like, do any of your characters have parents? Like,
no, they have issues. Hey, I'm going to put Nicole in the spotlight again because we are often like, I don't know how she does that. Everyone has parents. And they're like, fine.
Yeah.
But they still have all these very believable issues. And I'm like, I can't do that. You've got to be dead.
I can't do that.
She's dead. Sociopaths. I don't know.
I mean, okay. Megan, are you like pro-parent, anti-parent? Do you kill your parents off?
I go back and forth. Okay. Sometimes I like to have extremely dramatic parents on the page. Usually I like a over the top dramatic mother, which is funny because my mom really isn't like that. But anyway, I like them swanning around. I like mean fathers. I mean, they just bring so much angst, particularly if you're doing royals, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Because if you're doing royals, then, oh, the crown, blah, blah, whatever. So, and that, it's always really helpful when there's parents who wore the crown that they're handing down. But yeah. But, you know, an orphan's always fun because it's endless possibilities for drama.
I was going to say, it's like Stephen King, kill your darlings. We're like, kill the parents.
Yeah, kill all the parents. And I've heard people complain about that in some sort of more reader spaces or analytical spaces. And I get that. But I don't really think it's meant to be a statement. It's a statement about how short the book is. Yeah. So if you aren't going to rehabilitate the people who are bad on the page, they either have to be so bad that there's no one would want them rehabilitated, or they can't be on the page.
Yeah. My picture froze, but I am still here. I promise. Can you guys hear me? Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Just my picture froze. It's no big deal. It happens. So because you do feel like you have a little bit of freedom within the different lines, is it hard to create characters? Is it hard to pick out like that family or, you know, coming up with something new? Because all of you have been doing this a minute. You're not brand spanking new to being an author, to being a category author even. So are new character ideas, or do you just like roll a dice and say, okay, I've got a cowboy and a princess, or...
I think people are definitely interesting. So it's not so much about, you know, you can write a million different types of cowboys. And then if they're paired with a million different types of princesses, then it's a different book every time. And I think, you know, people respond differently to the same thing happening to them. You know, it's just like real life. You might have 10 friends who you all like the same thing, but you're not from the same backgrounds. You're not the same age. You're not, you know, this, that, and the other. And I think coming up with characters, I mean, I could come up with a bazillion. Like, it's just
literally did it on the phone. We have a little secret project, and we were plotting it out, and we just said, well, what, this person has to be with this sort of person, and well, then what about this and this person? And we all, oh yeah, because it's, if you can't tell the story without the characters, so you sort of put it all together at the same time. And sometimes if you're like, oh, it's this kind of, he's really grumpy, and of course she's a delight, so therefore it will turn into this sort of tale. Just sort of, they kind of tell themselves, I think, at this point, as you put the pieces together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then the fun is telling it their particular story within those maybe more generic frameworks. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think to Nicole's point, when you do write, because we all write a lot of different things. And so I think when you go from, you know, a Western single title where I might rely on family more, or I do have 50 bajillion books to refer back to and like all these details to remember, it's like when I get to pop back into presents where it's maybe a one-off and I don't have to think of all that, it like I'm just ready to go there and to like have, you know, and then I'm like, oh, now I can exit the opera and get back into my town that's familiar. Mm-hmm. But like, it's the different things that make all of it feel possible. Because the thing, I've been in that space where I was only doing one thing.
Yeah.
And it is just a recipe for madness. Because you're like, if I have to write one more ballroom, I swear.
Well, and the overthinking never leaves you alone. So you can never actually get into the story because you're like, didn't I do this? Like, yeah, you probably did.
Yes. Oh my God, I did that. Yeah. That's a killer. Mm-hmm.
I think it's really interesting because, you know, category, it you know, when I first started reading, it was third person head hopping was absolutely what was industry standard. And now it definitely mm-hmm. has gone more to third person dual point of view. We're just only getting the two characters. And all of you, I think all of you have written from head hopping to the current. Was it hard to make that change? You never head hopped?
I never head hopped either. I hate it. So no,
I don't like it.
I didn't know what it was. Because I was reading Category Presents was my intro to romance as a reader. Uh-huh. And you are some. So I observed when I decided I was going to try. I was like 21 though. So like I observed that some people put a break in for the point of view switch and some people didn't. And I think I went with might be Sharon Kendrick, who was head hopping at the time. I think she probably still does. She's Sharon Kendrick. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah, and
I
was she like, do whatever she wants. And she does it well.
I'm gonna take that cue. And then when I started reading more and when I started reading outside of category and when I started wanting to write outside of category, I realized that was not standard outside of that space. And so that's when I quit doing it, because I initially quit doing it for single title and then it just started to bother me. Like then I couldn't do it anymore. Like it bought, like, so I ended, I trained myself out of it.
I don't mind reading it though. Yeah, but I don't mind reading it.
There are some people who do it really well.
Yeah.
But I can't read it either.
You can't. So years ago, I mean, in the 90s, I took a creative writing course from Jennifer Cruzy. She was a professor at The Ohio State University. And she head hops. And she will tell you, she will never, ever not head hop. That's how she writes. And
she's a genius. So have at.
I mean, right? You can't not. But I love it. I love head hopping. And there are times when I pick up a book that there will be like a grandma character or even the bad guy, like in a suspense type thing that, man, I'd really, really like just even, you know, four paragraphs of insight to their chaos or their plans.
I think it's actually really hard. It takes a lot of talent. I started with Nora Roberts and I read only Nora Roberts for romance for a long time. And she head hops, still head hops. I love her head hopping, but I could never, whatever is going on up here, it just doesn't, but I cannot do it seamlessly. I cannot do it in a way that you would actually like. You might think you want to know those four paragraphs, but if you don't well, you don't, you know, it
I
has,
know. To, has to be done well.
Right. And I think it's actually incredibly difficult to do in a way that feels good for the reader.
Okay. I think it became such a big deal for people not to do it because very few people do it well. So people read a lot of not so great head hopping where you're like, I'm sorry, who is speak? Where are we? And you feel like you're on one of those rides at an amusement park. But I think people who do it well, it's so great. You don't even notice it. You're just immersed.
I think so many writing rules that you're told are rules are really just most people, 95% of people can't do this right. So we're going to just say, don't do it. And and there's 5% of the people out there that can do it well and will break the mold and somebody will love them. Mm-hmm.
Do any of you write your single titles in first person or are you all still writing third person when you're outside of your?
Yep.
I write a lot of presents first person too. I think you do too, Jackie, right?
Yep.
I just did a present
as well.
Yeah, I just did a presents that came out in December that was no hero point of view.
No hero.
First person.
Yeah. I have one coming out in June. It's also no hero point of view, all first person.
Do you like that freedom that you can do that sometimes, that you can write a first person story or a third person story?
Yeah, I like it.
It's fun.
Creatively, it's really interesting.
I was going to say, it's got to be a little hard to switch.
Yes, it is for me because I have not done as much first person. The three of them have done a little bit more than I have. Hazel has.
Yeah, but that's the book.
I read all my early books in first person. My original books were like chick
lit. Especially Megan and Jackie have done a lot more first person. Mm-hmm. And so I do find that when I go back to it, I'm like, I forget. I dictate. So it's like, I'll suddenly like slip back into third and I'm like, oh shoot. Or like if I leave and then I come back, I'm like, oh, I started in third. I forgot what I was doing.
The tense. For some reason, I'm doing my book right now is first person past. I don't know why, but it is. And so today I switched into present and had to go back and change it again. But yeah.
First person past is hard.
Yes.
It's so hard. I've done it, but it's very awkward. Like it.
And all I'm sitting here is thinking, why would you do that to yourself? Don't you?
Because it sometimes the story needs it, you know?
Fair.
Nicole and I write together as Hazelbeck, and all of those books are first person. And didn't we try to write it not first person at one point? That's my memory.
Yes, when we were doing separate books.
And you tried not to do present, okay. too. You tried it in
we
first.
We tried a lot of things. We tried a lot of things.
And then present was like the, that was.
That memory. Made it, that, yeah, that, then it took off.
That's so funny. So do you have a favorite book or character or sub series that you've written in category that you love? Like, you know, I don't know. I think that there was like at one point some people had a like Texas oil line, or there were like Montana Mavericks, because again, I'm collecting all those. I go, so I live in Ohio, and in Dayton, Ohio, is this $1.25 book warehouse. It is this giant warehouse full of used books. They buy old library, you know, when libraries like, you know, clear their shelves, they buy them in these big cargo boxes, off print that's no longer, you know, current. They buy those, and you can get categories. You can get six for $1.25 old categories. What? So I have picked up
so
like
cool.
old love swept covers, like the 80s, like
oil. Oh, fantastic.
I love
it. Oh, yeah.
I'm obsessed.
I still have some of mine. Yes. Yeah.
It's a trip. If anybody ever wants to go, let me know. I'll meet you there.
Yeah, we might have to make a pilgrimage.
It is the coolest space. Like, but I don't know where I was going with that, but I'm collecting all the Montana Mavericks. That's it. Like, I'm like, we're buying all of these. And my girl child, who's 19, she's like, this book was published in like 1999. Why do you want this? And I'm like, you just be quiet and you keep looking for the outline of the horses and shut up. And she's like digging through baskets. But do you have a favorite like character or book or subline that you have written in?
So hard. I mean, like,
I always want to shout out like Jackie's Harlequin Dares, which are all like the greatest things that were ever written and should be read more.
Dares are the spiciest end of the.
You both, Caitlin Cruz and Jackie Ashton and Dares were amazing.
They were fun.
So that we've written in or that we've read?
It can be any of.
It's so hard. I genuinely love Category as a reader, and it was my intro. And so writing for Presents, I will always say writing Presents is my favorite, even though I've enjoyed, you know, plenty of my Desires and Special Editions, just because Presents was my dream, because it was it's why I read romance and therefore why I write it. And so, you know, I read a Lynn Graham book. So I had my daughter December 30th, 2009, and I got my first publishing contract December 1st, 2009. So I had sold to Harlequin, but and that's how I remember how old my publishing career is. But she was in the NICU after she was born, and I remember like sitting in the NICU reading a Lynn Graham Presents, and just those books have always been so important to me. So even though I love Anything for You by Sarah Mayberry was like the first Friends to Lovers I read. That was part of the Blaze line that like changed my brain chemistry. I was like, oh my gosh, it's like a dirty Friends to Lovers. It's like somebody pulled this out of my fantasies. Like, I didn't even know I wanted that. I wasn't writing yet then. I was not, you know, I just started reading romance. And I was like, this is crazy that this exists. And like some old, like Laurie Foster Temptations. I'm just, I can't even name anything. I'm useless.
Yeah.
I name everything.
I think it's always.
I used to read Alexandra Sellers and Elizabeth Lowell and all these. Special Edition was not Special Edition. Silhouette Intimate Moments was my absolute favorite because they were longer. I wanted them longer. Mm-hmm. So I didn't read Presents until I met Jane Porter, and I read every single one of her Presents that she'd put out at that point over the course of I think about 8 months, and I was like, "What is this? Like, I want this. This is this high octane." Like Macy said, like. Whiskey shot. I didn't think I could write like that. So it was surprising to learn that I guess I could, but I couldn't get enough of them. Every single one. Jane Porter's Presents are some of my favorite things on this planet. Nicole, I have them all.
Is the Nora Roberts book with the Phantom in it category?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Yes. who has
moments, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think it was.
But yeah, I think it was.
I can see the cover in my head. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was. The other one that always I think is so wild is Maya Banks. She started in category.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's right. Yeah.
And I'm like, hers were always wacky. And
Desire, mainly, right?
I think so. Yeah. Her tycoons. She had the Greek tycoons that were,
I read those. Because when I started reading romance, I think I read like 300 Presents and Desires. Like, and I was getting them all from my, like, free from the book exchange. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have a book budget. But I liked that length because I could read it during my kids' naps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I would just, like, mainline them on Saturday when my husband was home. I'd read, like, 8 of them. It's great.
I always laugh at my poor children, the amount of paperbacks that have fallen on their heads as they were. Because I only have 2 children and they're 2003 and 2005. So pre, you know, e-readers. And but they felt the weight of a few paperbacks while nursing poor kids. They're both fine, promise. What about you, Jackie? Do you have a specific like line or title or even just one that stands out for you?
Back in the day when my friend and I were reading all the Mills and Boone, like we're from New Zealand, so we were looking out for all the New Zealand authors who, because, you know, it was like, wow, as a New Zealander, you can be published and you can get a publishing contract, because these Robin Donald and Daphne Clear were some old school Presents writers and they were both from New Zealand, and they're not writing for the line now, but they used to. And New Zealand used to be in all of their books, and I used to love them. They were really well done. What was that other woman? She, another Kiwi, who was also kind of bonk and stuff. She wrote Mistress of the Groom, and I cannot remember her name, but it was iconic because it opens with the hero getting married and the heroine bursts through the doors of the church and storms down the aisle and puts some money in his pocket. And it's to pay for the night they had together or something like that.
Oh my God, that's excellent.
Yeah, Susan Napier, that was it.
Fantastic.
Yeah, she had some great books.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned New Zealand, because so before I was reading romance, I was reading a lot of like inspirational romance. So I was reading like Laurie Wick and Francine Rivers. And then, you know, anything historical is like set in England. But I remember picking up the Presents, and I think the first one I read was by, I want to say it was Diana Hamilton.
Yeah.
It was set in Melbourne. And then lots and lots set in Melbourne. And being like, oh, it's like Australia, like glamorous Australia. And you just didn't see that in,
well, I mean, anywhere New else. Zealand, can I just say New Zealand was never glamorous New Zealand, but
glamorous to people in like suburban New Jersey, like me, I assure you.
I was in a trailer park in Oregon, so it
I was going to say.
There was a Miranda Lee where the heroine, I do not remember the title, but this was one of the first Presents that I read. Miranda Lee, where the heroine had a horse farm and she had 2 lovers that cycled in and out with the seasons. And one was the guy that sold her the horse feed and the other was the guy that did the horse's vaccinations. But because when she was a young girl, she had watched horses like copulate, she was terrified of like the dominance of it. So she could only make love if she was on top, and the Presents hero who arrived at her farm obviously showed her what was up. So anyway,
that the
was
spice. Okay, I am looking at this cover of the Mistress of the Groom.
Yes,
with the scandals across
that's the one. That's the one.
I now have a new book that I need to go look for.
I think it was something like that. Anyway, he's getting married, and she put something in his pocket. I think.
You need to open a book with that. Do a tribute.
Yeah, and an homage.
That would be fun.
An homage to Susan Napier.
This is actually how we come up with stories a lot. We're like, you should do this. Do it to Nicole dared me to write. Our kids were watching Sophia the First one summer, many summers ago, because our kids are ancient now. And I was like, this show is insane. And Nicole was like, write me a presents with that. Like with the heroine that becomes a princess and she's got weird sexual tension with her stepbrother. And I was like, yeah, I can do that. Why not?
Sure, why not?
You know, just the presents I've just done is a sort of a diehard homage. So, you know, why not?
Wait, is that out? Is that your latest release that has the diehard?
It's one, I've just written it. It's coming out the end of next year.
Okay. Please remind me to pre-order that one because I'm going to need that. No, because we did our Christmas TBR episode and TBR episode, and that was something we talked about. Nobody has written a fan fiction romance to Die Hard. And
so, they have now.
Obviously, because it's Jackie, the hero is like the bad guy.
Which, yeah. I mean.
The bad guy is who again? That's right. Yeah, the only hot woman.
I mean, when I say it's very loosely based because presents, you can't do certain things in there. So, you know, I did what I could.
It's Christmas Eve Ultimatum and it's out in October.
Okay.
2020. Oh, yeah.
Well, we did our Hear Me Out cakes. Like, we did a whole episode from the TikTok trend, Hear Me Out. And I had Hans Gruber on my Hear Me Out cake.
I'm with that.
Wow.
I like a morally gray hero. I mean,
I just liked Alan Rickman.
Yeah.
Right? Alan Rickman forever.
Amen.
I can fall in love with the bad guy. Can you write an intrigue where the heroine is in love with the bad guy?
They probably would not let me do that. Although I did say one time I wrote a bad guy and he was essentially just a presents hero. Like he was a bad guy in intrigue, but he could have been a presents hero.
Well, and before you started writing presents, we were like, we should like do a crossover where like there's a thing and then we never did. But now you could cross over with yourself. So
you could.
That's so funny. You know, and I do think that it was category that were some of the first that took me out of the U.S. I think that those were some of the Australian-based, the New Zealand-based authors that took us out and showed us that, you know, the world is bigger than just Ohio.
Yeah.
And
or like the Regency Ton,
right.
All that out there.
Yes.
I mean, and I did. I grew up, I cut my teeth on the bodice rippers. Like,
of course.
I'm obsessed with Joanna Lindsay. Somebody was talking about that the other day. And I'm like, they wouldn't fly today. There's like zero consent in some of those.
Macy, was it you that I was describing the romance in Clan of the Cave Bear to?
Yes.
And she was like, what are you talking about? I was like, people just read that.
Yeah.
There was Valley of the Horses. Valley of the Horses, Megan. Mm-hmm. That was the, you know, that one.
I know what it was. Yes.
Yes.
Well, and it's funny because I was reading an old category from the 80s. And in the 80s, there was this whole thing with aphrodisiacs. Like, it was in all the romance books. The one of the most popular is Secret Fire by Joanna Lindsay. But there were categories that had aphrodisiacs in them. And I think they were probably all dares. And people are like, no, that wasn't a thing. And I'm like,
it was definitely a thing.
It was a thing, you guys.
There's 100% of Blaze with an aphrodisiac. I can see the cover in my head because when I graduate, like when I really like was like the book exchange is no longer enough for me. I need to like go deeper. I started ordering my books from harlequin.com and like just scouring pages and pages and pages of books. Like some of these covers will live in my head forever. So I'm like, I know there was one. I will never remember the title, but I can literally see it.
Yeah, there were lots of those that you're like, they wouldn't publish that today. Like,
they would not.
Like, there was a hit.
Well, it would be dark romance.
Yes,
that is true.
Yeah,
there was one, and I'm not Elizabeth Beverly wrote one for Blaze, where they were under hypnosis. It was a friends to lovers. And when the like word was said, they like couldn't keep their hands off each other, except like he wasn't really hypnotized. Oh. Or something. It was not messed up. I read it like 100 times.
Okay, that sounds weird.
Worked for me. But
that like sounds so, what are you gonna so do? Wacky, but oh I actually am like, oh, I feel like I need to read
the hero and heroine were, I think the hero was Tucker, so I still remember that. So okay. I don't know.
I'm very mean to Friends to Lovers books, so I just want to say to the audience, that's a Friends to Lovers book I would believe and read and not complain about. So Friends to Lovers is one of those tropes. I don't know. Everybody has their one trope, right? That you're like,
yeah.
It has to be done so exceptionally well for you to believe that it actually happens. Like Secret Baby. I love Secret Baby and I can tolerate a lot of things in Secret Baby. And there are other people who are like, this would just never happen. There's the internet. How do you lose contact with somebody? And I'm like, I don't know. I believe in Secret Baby.
He's mean.
Yeah. I don't believe in Friends to Lovers though.
My real life romance is a Friends to Lovers. So.
That's what everyone tells me. That's like Jack and Jacinda Wilder. They're always
why don't
like,
you believe? Why don't you believe it?
So I have a problem, especially if they're longtime Friends to Lovers that are in each other's life and spend time together. And it's just this one moment that everything changes and they finally see each other sexually and in that way, it's like there was never any other instance. There was never that. I like the yearning, the tension.
Yeah.
See, I think that hinges on, because Megan and I have had this discussion, because you're not the biggest Friends to Lovers fan for that reason, really, because I think when we...
But I write it anyway.
Yeah, because I think when you don't get something, it's great to write it.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, I struggle with seeing it. And so I think it's interesting to force myself to construct one that I believe. Mm-hmm. And I love Friends to Lovers, but I'm really picky about what it has. Like, I have a lot of expectations on it because I love it. And so I always think, like, for me, in order for it to be really believable, there has to be a lot of, like, reasons that that friendship is a friendship, because it has to be, because they are so messed up. So, like, in reality, that attraction could have been there, but they are so... I think they have to be my most messed up characters, because they have to be so emotionally devastated. Like, I cannot deal with you being that because you need to be here, like, keeping me together.
And I can believe right person, wrong time, Friends to Lovers. Like, I can understand that one. Mm-hmm. But I read one once. It was a couple years ago. And I highlighted every time either the hero or the heroine said, I'm really attracted to them, but. So the word but. In this book, every time the word but was used, that they couldn't be together. And it was a slow burn, which not my favorite, which is another reason I like category. 127 instances of but. And I remember that, like, you know, 6 years later. And I'm like, I can't take it anymore.
But okay. So I just found it in Decent Suggestion by Elizabeth Beverly, and it's Turner. So it's Becca and Turner, and they go to a hypnotherapist to be cured of their smoking habit and end up having sex and stuff. And it
as
is.
As
you do. As
you do. Totally believable.
Get a vape instead. Like,
oh. Oh my gosh.
That's so funny.
Get a vape. It was 2010. That actually surprises me. I was earlier than that.
It surprises me that it is that, you know, that range, but not really though, because I think we just did last week's episode was Romancing the Decades, and we took from 1990 to current, like, some of the, what were the popular books, what are some of the trends we saw happening, and 2010, that fits. It wouldn't have gone past that 2016, but it fits that 2010
interesting
2016 if you look at what, like, were the trending popular books and what was selling. And what do you think is the most rewarding aspect of your career as an author, and, you know, starting in category or writing within category, what has been the best thing that has happened for you?
I mean, I guess it's taking my kids and not have a job and not deal with people.
Well, you have a job. You just don't have a traditional job.
I mean, that's what I mean. I don't have to leave. I don't have to talk to people. I get fired when I have to talk to people. So
So it's the, like,
she's high school, so
you don't have to wear pants. So is it that? Because that's what it's for me.
Leave the house, period. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
I'm at these schools because of writing. You guys are the most fulfilling part of my job.
That's so sweet. Yeah. I'm going to vomit now. Thanks.
I knew they would love it. I knew they would love that.
I think it's the readers who come up to you and they're like, you wrote this book. And you're like, oh, I don't think that was me. And they start talking about it. You're like, I still don't think that was me. And they start waving their hands around. And you're like, and then there was this. And then there was that. And then you're like, oh, that was me. Oh, you read that. And then they're like, yeah. And it's the whole thing. You're like, how funny that I, because as an author, the things that you might, like, I remember all my books. It's just a different thing. Yeah. The way someone might describe it to you is different. I just love all the readers. And I love that they pick up these wackadoo books. And they are pretty wackadoo. And read them and love them and keep coming back for more. It's the best.
I don't think they're wackadoo, but I am that reader that's like, give me the chaos.
What a thing, like when you're sitting at a, that was one of the cooler things that happened to me. I was at in Texas and it was one of the, this has happened to me like three times. I'm a lightning rod for this. I'll go in for an event, like literally fly across the country for a day. And then for some reason, mine are the books that like don't arrive at the group signing. So I'm like, hi, I'm just sitting here with just me. And that had happened to me at that event. And so I was just like sitting there and no one was coming to me because I didn't have books. So why would they?
Right.
And somebody came with one of my presents and they brought it from home. Awesome. And like, it was one that my editor didn't particularly like at the time. And because she was like, he's awful. And I was like, agreed. Like, but
that's the whole point.
Gonna be so that she was like, okay, you know, and deferred to me on that. And that was the one someone brought me from home. And it was an older at that time. And they were like, oh, I just love this book. And
yeah.
It was like, it was awesome. And that's one of the things that I think is so fun about presents is like, you'll get slaughtered on Goodreads when one of them like initially comes out because you did something that was a little bit like, a little different or a little bit, I don't want to say risky because that sounds silly. Like it's
a little outside the box.
I made a hero a cult leader. People didn't like that too much on Goodreads originally.
Well, right. But that's the book that people will talk about for years. Because now that is the book I hear so much when people talk about Caitlin Cruz presents.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, she wrote a cult leader. That and the Flowers in the Attic duet.
Yeah. That's right. What about you, Jackie? What's been the most rewarding?
Stepsister and stepmother duet.
Oh, yeah.
What's that title?
And he's like, the one where she pretends that she has amnesia, that one?
Yes, where she fakes her own death to get away from him.
Yes, fakes her own death to get away from their toxic relationship. Pretends that she doesn't remember him when he gets up in her face and he screams, I'm the love of your life. You
know, a secret baby, but she faked her own death and faked her amnesia. Yes, that one. Anyway.
Yep, that one.
Going on.
Moving on.
Okay, Jackie, what's your favorite part? Apparently, these guys are chaos monsters.
Favorite part of writing category?
Yeah.
Oh.
Or the most rewarding thing for this career?
Just being able to let loose with my own special brand of nastiness. Because, you know, I can't write a king in any other... You know, in any other space, I can't write.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just all these things that you are not allowed to do in single title, or they're too extreme, they're too something. But in presents, you can just do it. And, you know, the logistics also don't really matter. I had one copy edit comment about, oh, you know, the hero has kidnapped the heroine and it's like he takes her overseas somewhere. I think she was in England and he takes her to Greece and it's like she will need her passport. Oh. And it's like, are you kidding me? It's a
prince.
He's a billionaire. He just flung some money at somebody and they let it go through.
Exactly.
The real world.
I once had someone write me and say, you have to read the bans and it takes this long to get married in Italy. And I was like, not if you have all the money in the world. It takes however long you want it to take.
I didn't realize there were like no rules in the world. Yeah. We don't need passports. We don't need to read the bans. We just throw some money at it and we're fine.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. In presents land? Absolutely.
Because you're not here for the details, are you? You're there for the big
emotions.
Nobody wants
a procedural breakdown of how the immigration works in Tuscany. They just want the Tuscan villa.
Right. I mean, I don't care that you had to apply for 17 stupid visas and stand at the embassy. I do not care.
I don't want to know about that. In fact, I want to think that he sent a person to handle that because you were too busy lolling about being, you know, oh, I'm so trapped in his Tuscan villa while being, you know, bonbons thrown at me. Yes, I will wear that gorgeous gown and a makeover that you've arranged at an atelier in France. Can't wait. La 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 la.
Yeah.
Oh, my life is terrible.
I want all of that.
I'll do well.
Okay, so for each of you, I'm going to ask you what's next. Or what is your current release that our listeners can find? So, Maisie, I know it's outside of Harlequin, but you just had a new release January 1st. Well,
yes,
sort of.
So happy after all.
December, it was the Prime Read. So some of us have had
it. So Prime Reads in December, but it's in Kindle Unlimited now. So it's I love it when it's like super cheap for people to check me out. So, and even though it is not a category romance, it is in many ways an ode to category romance because the heroine is a category romance author as well as a motel owner. So there's a lot about tropes in there. There's a little bit of publishing industry kind of stuff because the hero is a very serious dude writer of dude books. And one of the things that I didn't say in the book that I feel is implied is when they're sort of talking about speed and, you know, her writing 4 books a year while she runs the motel and he's sort of like clutching his pearls. It's like, well, dude, you probably get $100,000 a book and she's getting, you know, $3,000 and then she's going to get her royalties. So it's just a different economies of things. And that was just kind of fun to get to include in a book because you know how that is.
Yes. Truth. Yeah. And actually, that is one of our picks this month for our Wednesday episode at the end of the month. So everybody can join us as we talk about that. Megan, what is next for you? Or what is current?
What is next for you? What is next for, I have no idea what's coming out next. No idea at all. I think it's on my website. Probably. No, that's not true. I wrote, it's a duet. It's the second book of a duet where the first one, I think, just came out, and that's Greek Enemy Bride, where due to, you know, the machinations of the legal system, which exists only in Presents, the will insists that the two of them marry to take over this hotel in Greece.
She's the stepmother.
And she's the stepmother, obviously, because that's how that works. And I believe,
she's also a virgin. Secret is next. But yeah, Greek's Enemy Bride, and then you have Carrying.
Yeah, and then his sister is in that, and she is accidentally pregnant by his grim and overbearing best friend. So that was really fun. And I'm currently writing a Mafia Presents, which will come out next year, unless they don't let me publish it, because it's completely insane. And then I think that's it.
That's so fun. What is current or next for you, Jackie?
Currently, I've got The Twins That Bind out for Presents, and it's a mathematician billionaire called Aristophanes and a kindergarten teacher. So that's in twins, as you do. And at the end of January, I have a book that is not a category. It's a rom-com called Book People. Nearly said Book Lovers. Good God. Book People about... rival booksellers.
So a little bit of You Got Mail kind of vibe.
Kind of, yeah. It's a bit like that. He owns a very highbrow bookshop, and she's just opened a genre fiction bookshop opposite his in a little English village, and he is very, very cross.
Nice. I like a good grouch. Nicole, what's next or current for you?
I am in the middle of an intrigue 7-book series. So the 5th book is out right now, Cold Case Protection. And the 6th books will come out at the end of January, and then the 7th book will come out in a 7th at the end of February. They're all cold case books about a family whose parents' disappearance is a cold case. And so as we get to the end of the series, they start to figure out what happened to their parents many moons ago. That's all coming out right now and soon.
Love that. Okay, so here's some information podcast stuff. Patreon update, swag pack sponsor for January this month, right now, is author Rebecca Gallo. Those should be hitting your mailbox this week. Make sure you join us back here Wednesday night for our discussion of The Rancher Returns by Brenda Jackson. All of our books in January for our Wednesday episodes are either authors that got their start in category or known for category. So we did, well, and then, or an HQ and author, because we did Amy Dawes last week and then Brenda Jackson this coming week, and then we're doing Nora Roberts and then Maisie. For a list of books talked about this weekend, you can visit our on-the-shelf show notes at buzzingaboutromance.com. I have linked all the authors' socials and websites on our on-the-shelf show notes so you can connect with them to find out what they're doing. Don't forget to follow us on social media for more updates and join our community of romance enthusiasts. First of all, thank you to all of you for giving me your time and joining me on this episode. I appreciate you all so very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for writing category. Thank you for not giving up on it. So that's a wrap into our deep dive of category romance. A huge thank you to our amazing guests for sharing their insight, experience, and passion for this cornerstone romance genre. If you haven't already picked up a category romance, we hope this episode inspires you to dive in and discover the magic of these stories. Don't forget to share your favorite category romance or author with us on social media. We'd love to hear your recommendations. As always, thanks for buzzing about romance with us, and we'll see you next time for more love, laughter, and happily ever afters. Until next time, everybody, happy reading.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.